you know, both of us. And he invited us in and put salve on our wounds because we had gotten a couple of cuts. My glasses were broken. And invited us in, and he sat us down and had us really kind of debate each other for about an hour.
Oh, my God! You promise this is true?
It is absolutely
true. What is your name?
This is Listener Ian. And this happened about 25 years ago, and I hadn't thought of it for the longest time before I heard your show.
This happened in Ohio?
You should tell everyone you know this story.
Well, now that I recall it, why would I tell them all this story? What's the point of it?
It's amazing.
Because it's on your topic.
This is the first missionary on missionary violence show story I have ever heard.
Well, we don't want to. Now I feel bad.
No way. This is amazing.
It puts us in. I've left the church, but I still have a lot of feeling and family in the church.
Well, one of my colleagues at work was in the LDS, is a Mormon, and she was a Sally, you know her. She did her missionary work in Ohio, but she wouldn't have been 25 years ago. She's only like, you know, 35. But I love this story.
So. All right, listener Ian, listen at the end of the hour because you might be my winner.
Okay, you said you didn't get any internet callers, and we're listening to you on a BlackBerry through the radio as well.
Yay, good.
You get extra points for that.
Yeah, you do.
So far as I'm concerned, Ian is the winning call tonight.
Yeah, I'm not even sure I want to take any more.
This is a great story.
This is classic.
Yeah, and I don't blame you guys, either of the four of you, because the stakes are very high.
Yeah, this is good.
Souls.
Of course.
Yeah.
All right, Ian, listen at the end of the hour.
All right.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
I think the most amazing part of the story is the guy invited them in.
I know, and then they had to debate.
Say, get the hell out of here, please.
They had to debate.
Yeah, because I'm the sort of guy who does not like having Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormon elders come to my door.
People are talking about whether that was made up. Do you think it was made up?
No, I don't think it's an amazing story. But his mastery of the terminology was perfect. So I totally believe this story. As incredible as it is. Well, you can see, you know, the homeowner and the, you know, he knew what he was talking about. And having encountered enough of these people, I totally believe he is steeped in the culture, even though, as he said, he's left the Jehovah's Witnesses. But that was a great story.
Brother Joseph?
Brother Joseph, yeah.
That was a nice touch.
Yeah. Elder. I think most people have had either Jehovah's Witnesses. In my neighborhood, they're all sort of older Spanish-speaking ladies. But we do have the Mormon elders who, curiously, are always like 20-year-olds.
People are getting mad that we fell for that. We fell for that.
Oh, I don't think we fell for that.
And I don't care. True or fake, it was good.
Yeah.
If you got an imagination to come up with that, you deserve a prize.
Well, there's a couple Mormons I work with. When I get back to work next week, I'm going to ask them to like listen to that and see if they think it rings true for them.
Let's take a call.
Because it does for me.
FMU, you're on the radio.
Hello.
Hi, you can turn them down now, Andy.
Yes.
This is a normal call. Hello.
Normal call.
Hi.
Hi, what's your story?
Yeah, so what's the topic?
Oh, Jesus.
Fights with strangers.
I hung up. FMU, you're on the radio.
Hey, sweetheart, how are you?
Hi, Mikey D.
How you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
We're doing well now, thanks to the power of God.
Wait.
What are you doing?
Want to say hello to Frangry on FMU? Hello?
Hi.
His pet dog wants to say hi.
I don't know. Should I water the lawn tonight or what? I don't know. There's nobody out here.
Nah.
Don't water the lawn.
It's too hot.
It's too hot. Just stay inside, man. Like us.
You're not supposed to water them when it's this hot.
Because a lot of hot mommies pass by, they think I own the house.
Jesus Christ.
Chicks love lawn watering. What can I say?
Chicks love homeowners.
Anyway.
Hey, listen, Mikey D, have you ever gotten in a fight with a stranger?
No, but I used to stare when I was, well, this is going back a ways. I don't do it anymore, but when I was like in my early teens, I used to like stare at a lot of girls and they say like, what are you staring at? And I would say like, when I figure it out, I'll let you know.
Oh my God, you're
like,
such a nerd.
Then we get into like all kinds of stuff, but then we wind up getting to know each other and exchanging numbers, so I don't know.
Nerd.
I guess that was like, you know.
Come on, I can't believe you've never gotten in a fight with a stranger.
No, I don't get into fights with anybody. I'm
you're from Brooklyn.
Oh, my God, you're right, Mikey D. I love you so much.
I love you, too, honey. When are we going to, like, you know, Andy will be the best man.
I don't do marriage.
You don't do marriage?
No.
What about friends and benefits?
Okay.
That's a movie, man.
Yeah, it is.
How about polygamy?
I'm down with that.
Andy Babes, what's up?
I'm fine. I'm doing okay.
I love how every time Mikey D calls, he talks to me, and then he realizes you're here, and he's like, oh, hey, Andy, how are you?
But listen.
Helps you realize I'm here.
About fights with strangers?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know. You know something? When I water lawns, sometimes the water goes on people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they get mad.
A little crazy. Like, you know, they say, like, oh, I got, one guy said, you got my girlfriend wet. And she started laughing, and I says, I didn't know I had that kind of an effect.
That's a good one. I like that. All right, Mikey D, thanks for calling.
I love you, baby.
Have a good one.
All right.
We have one more call, and then
one more call.
I mean, listener Ian is the winner, though.
Oh yeah, hands down.
Okay, one more call.
Can we call him brother Ian.
FMU, yes, FMU. You're on the radio.
I love Shaquille O'Neal. He hits people.
Jesus Christ! All right, listener Ian, brother Ian, you're the winner of tonight's show. Email me your address and T-shirt size at shutupweirdo@wfmu.org.
Why don't we promote him to Father Ian?
I don't know.
Or an honorary elder
kinda
Ian.
We're kind of early. What time is it?
We have a minute and a half.
Oh, okay.
I feel like ending it early on this high note.
Okay.
Okay, well, you all, you've been listening to Shut Up Weirdo here on WFMU. You can comment during the show at WFMU.org, the website. We have a website, shutupweirdo.com, which has a picture of Frangie's legs on it. Check it out. It also has links to our pages on Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. Please like us on Facebook. Please go there and like us on Facebook, on our fan page. I lost my place.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm Andy. The next thing I say is, I'm Andy.
I'm Frangie.
She's Frangie. Up next is Stuff You Should Know. Then at 8 o'clock, Mr. Fine Wine is doing a live remote from Coney Island, 8 to 9 o'clock.
Okay,
volunteer Michelle is board hopping. It's exciting.
Jesus.
It's exciting. It's a live event.
Did you do the station ID?
No, I'm about to. Give me a chance here. I still got 30 seconds.
It's like 10 o'clock already.
No, it's not 10 o'clock already. Okay, here it comes. You are listening to the big one, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, live and archived at WFMU.org. So let's
end it here.
We're going to end it here.
Josh and Chuck and Stuff You Should Know, the program that exposes the internal workings of life on this planet. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast, which is available from HowStuffWorks.com. Tonight, Josh and Chuck explore the ancient Japanese military tradition of samurai warriors. And then in part two, they move closer to home and explain the phenomenon of fainting goats, those goats that fall to the ground when startled. Now here's Josh and Chuck.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Bryant.
Hi, Josh.
Chuck, I'm going to tell you something that you might not know about me.
Oh, boy.
As a youth.
As a youth?
Youth. An older boy in the neighborhood named Tommy Roper trained me as a ninja.
An altar boy or older?
Older.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm a trained ninja, right?
Really?
Yeah, this encompassed... generally sitting on top of a storage shed in my backyard,
right,
quietly,
sure,
for hours on end, waiting for somebody to walk past so that we could find out whether or not they noticed us.
And that's where you started smoking because you were bored?
Not yet. That came like a year or two later.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you did not adhere to the Bushido?
No. I don't know if smoking is outlawed by the Bushido.
I just meant the way of the ninja.
No, that's the samurai.
Well, no, the ninja, though, shunned the Bushido.
Right.
Right.
Okay, I got what you're saying.
I think we're on the same page.
Yeah. So, Chuck, I thought, you know, I kind of carried that with me my whole life.
I'm sure.
Like, I'd see a throwing star every once in a while and be like, I know how to throw that, you know?
Did you have any of those?
Tommy did. I never had any.
Those were big in the 80s for little nerds to collect.
Totally. I found out, though, when I read How Ninjas Work,
mm-hmm.
I am nothing more than a dilettante.
Really?
Yeah. I was surprised to find that out.
I believe you said ninjas. That is not correct, right?
No, it is. It's ninja. It's like fish or deer.
I know. We've been drilling that into each other's head
all
morning.
And it hasn't stuck at all.
And I'm still saying ninjas.
Yeah.
So if we slip up, then give us a break.
Right. So, Chuck.
Josh.
One of the first things I noticed from this article was that ninja, although Japanese in nature and origin, actually can trace its roots back to the Chinese.
Yes, very much, because of kind of what I was just talking about with the Bushido was the samurai code where you very respectfully would face one another, face your enemy one-on-one and do battle. And the ninja subscribed more to the art of war school of thought.
Right, as espoused by Sun Tzu.
Which was a little sneakier.
Right.
And smarter, if you ask me.
It is smarter, and I mean, that's how the American colonists won the war for independence.
Yeah.
The British were all like, hey, we've got a bunch of Hessians here, and they're ready to fight you on this field. And
we were
our guys were, yeah, jumping out of trees and bayoneting them. Yeah, very ninja-esque, very Sun Tzu. He wrote The Art of War back in the 4th or 5th century B.C.
Right.
And, yeah, it kind of went against the grain, as it were.
Yeah, big time.
Where you could, I think there was a chapter 13. Where he specifically said that you should use people to spread confusion in the ranks and paranoia through sabotage.
Spying.
Yeah, espionage, that kind of stuff.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, just basically underhanded stuff. Disguise was okay.
Yeah, deception. I love it.
Right. So that is actually where that's pretty much the basis of ninja, isn't it?
Yeah, from what I gather.
And what is it, the art of ninja, the art that ninjas practice?
Yeah, it's
that
called
ninja practice?
Ninjutsu.
Right.
And it is not a martial art, but it is an art of war is what they call it.
It sounds like a martial art.
Yeah, but it's not.
Okay.
That's because utsu. It sounds like jujitsu.
Right. So, okay. We've got this first seed of the ninja planted by Sun Tzu.
Indeed.
Right?
Uh-huh.
It takes a little while to catch on. And actually, strangely enough, we can trace back to some of the first ninja stories, right?
Right.
Some people who were thought to be among the first ninja in Japan.
Right.
We've moved over to Japan now, by the way.
Yes.
Right? Tell me about Prince Yamato.
Yeah, Prince Yamato is in some halls called the first ninja.
Right.
Because he was the first person that we know of to blatantly use deception and disguise by dressing as a woman.
Yep.
And to attract, this is where it gets a little hinky, to literally physically attract to barbarian chieftains. So apparently he was a good looker as a woman.
Or androgynous at the least.
Yeah, he actually gained their confidence and lulled them into a sense of security, a false sense of security, and killed them.
Yeah, then he butchered them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not a bad one, frankly. I like that first ninja story.
I like yours, though, the 13-year-old kid.
Yeah. Kumawaka.
Yeah.
He was a little, I guess kind of a little shrimpy, right? But he had some pretty good legs on him. He traveled a really far distance to visit his father, who was ailing.
Right.
But his father was being held prisoner by a monk and his family. Apparently monks did that back then.
I didn't know that.
Now, what we do now, right? So little 13-year-old Kumawaka was turned away. After traveling this long distance, wanting to see his father who's dying.
Sure.
And before he gets a chance to see him, his father dies.
Awful.
So the kid's like, you know what? I swear vengeance right here and now.
Right. Little 13-year-old vengeance.
Right. So I think possibly not so much that he'd read The Art of War, but just that being 13, you know, he wasn't aware of pitched battles or really didn't care about them. And he was like, you know what? I'm going to use a little bit of deception myself.
Yeah, plus he wasn't big enough to just fight them straight up.
Right, right. He started kind of, I guess, staking out the monk's home. And this kid was awesome. He opened a window to the monk's bedroom and let a bunch of moths in, and they flocked to a lantern, blotting out all the light.
Right.
Whereupon he snuck into the room, got the monk's sword, and butchered him.
Yes.
Have you noticed that most ninja stories end in butchery?
Yeah, that's a good point.
The story's not over, though, right?
I don't think so. Well, you should also point out, though, he was actually in their home. He faked an illness, remember? That's how he got in there.
That's right.
He faked like he was sick, so they brought him in and took care of him, and he gained their trust, and then did the old moth trick.
Right. The old moth trick.
Right.
That's like Ninja 101 right there.
Oh, yeah.
So after he butchers the monk, he flees and he's being pursued. So he climbs up a huge length of bamboo until it tips over a river. And he jumps off the other side and is gone.
Yeah.
Into the annals of ninja history.
That is serious ninja stealth right there.
Yeah.
Little 13-year-old.
Right.
How many times can I say little 13-year-old?
I don't know. We could go back and count.
So, yes, even though these are cool stories and they are thought of as maybe practicing the first ninja practices, they aren't really believed to be the first ninjas, right?
No, I mean, they're kind of legend.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of lore surrounding ninja. It's really tough, as the Grabster who wrote this article pointed out, to kind of separate fact from fiction.
Sure.
And in some cases, Japanese historians just have omitted ninja altogether because they're so secretive.
Right. Or, you know, exaggerated and glorified it to the point that it's misinformation.
Right.
Which is part of the whole ninja lore as well.
Right, which apparently the ninja were perfectly fine with.
Of course they were.
Because it freaked people out.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a minute, right? The supernatural stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Chuck, what was the true birth of the ninja then?
Well, they think that the regions of Iga and Koga, or is it Iga? Iga and Koga.
You know what? I think I have no idea for those two, but
right.
You are getting good at the Japanese. And let me tell you, you have what is called pura pura pura, which means you're very fluent. It's Japanese for, it describes very fluent talk.
Japanese is a little easier to pronounce, I think, than some, because it's usually just kind of pronounced like it reads. There's just a lot of letters.
Sometimes, yeah. And there's a lot of vowels together that don't make any sense.
But we're doing our best.
Yeah, you're doing a great job.
We're going with Iga and Koga, and they are considered to be the birthplace of ninja as a major force in warfare.
Right, and here's why: there was a bunch of clans in these two regions, and the guys who were members of the clans tended to farm themselves out as mercenaries, which we've talked about before.
Absolutely.
And they actually adopted a lot of the ninja attitude.
The ninjitude?
The ninjitude, right. Nice. They adopted a lot of it serving as spies, saboteurs, and assassins, right?
Yeah, I love that word, by the way, saboteur.
It's a pretty cool word. That's
great
why
word.
Firefly was one of my favorite G.I. Joes, which we'll get to in a minute.
Wow, it's all coming around.
Yeah. So in Iga and Koga, right, this region, rather than turning to brewing or grain production,
right,
they turned to ninja production.
Yeah.
You know?
And they were hired out by the daimyo, which was another word for a lord.
Pura, pura, pura.
A feudal lord. And basically, like mercenaries, they would, whoever had the most dough would get hired. So they were not known as loyal. They would go where the money was.
No, which, as you said, is completely contrary to the Bushido code of the samurai,
sure.
Who I guess you could probably make a case was a rival faction in Japan at the time.
Right.
If you wanted somebody who would be willing to die for you, you had your samurai.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted somebody who you could pay to go do horrible things for you, but then may eventually come back and kill you after he was hired for somebody else, you went with the ninja.
Yeah.
Right?
Good point.
So one of the cool things that the Grabster mentioned was that the reason Iga and Koga were, I guess, these hotbeds of activity for ninja was that the art of ninjutsu was passed on from father to son generation after generation after generation.
Right. And we're talking sneaking around. From what I gather from reading is that the lowly ninja were the ones that were slinging the swords around, and the true skilled ninja did not do a lot of face-to-face fighting. They were sneaking around. They were gathering information. Like you said, they were sabotaging. They were spying and giving misinformation.
Right. And apparently, since castles figured so largely into feudal Japan, the ninja became especially adept at infiltrating castles.
Oh, yeah.
And escaping from castles that were under siege. There's the story of one ninja who was hired by a daimyo who owned a castle that was under siege. And one night he slipped out, went to the enemy encampment, stole their flag, and then when they woke up the next morning, they saw their flag like on the embattlements of the castle, which you can imagine you just
mocking
be like,
them.
Wah, wah, wah.
Right.
We have that sound effect?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Or did they wake up and think, did we already capture this castle? What were we doing here? That's what I would think.
Did we already catch it?
Because their flag was flying, but apparently it was a mocking thing. And,
right, yeah.
It
That's
would
kind
of take the wind out of their sails.
And there was also a another story, legend, ninja lore, of a group of ninjas, actually. Uh-huh. A group of ninja, sorry. That captured the, I guess, the badge, a paper lantern badge.
Oh, yeah.
Identified, like, it identified with a castle and a daimyo.
Uh-huh. Tell that one.
Okay. I'm going to knock your socks off right here, Chuck. So they stole this lantern, reproduced it, reproduced the badge, put them on other lanterns, and then just walked right into the castle.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Butchered everybody.
Like they do.
Yeah. And then walked back out. And when everybody woke up the next morning and found the people who were not butchered, found, you know, what was going on, they had created paranoia.
Right.
Which, as we said, is another thing that ninja like to do.
Absolutely. Disruption.
Yes.
They were very skilled.
Wait, are your socks knocked off?
These are actually new socks, and they are still on.
Yeah, I can tell.
Did you know that George Hamilton once said that he wore a new pair of socks every day? He never wore the same pair of socks
twice. I could see him doing that.
My good friend Andrew told me that once.
Really?
Moving on. The ninja, Josh, you know what their main deal was? You know what they were best at?
What?
Assassination.
Yes.
Sneaking in the dead of night and killing you.
Yeah.
In your sleep sometimes. Yeah. And my favorite story was, and this one is not verified, but the legend of the ninja who hid beneath the outhouse. And you know what goes on beneath the outhouse.
Yeah, he hid in the pit.
Hid in the pit, and then the daimyo came in, obviously, sat down on the john, and the ninja struck from below with the sword.
Yeah.
But
that's not comfy.
My favorite part of the story, though, it says it's probably not true because historical records show that the daimyo in question probably died of a stroke or brain aneurysm. But I think maybe if you had a sword stuck up your butt, then maybe you might have a stroke or a brain aneurysm.
I would have a stroke for sure.
So maybe that did happen.
Plus, also, I could see his family trying to keep that hush-hush.
Yeah, I would say so.
You know?
But it made the daimyo very paranoid.
Right, yeah, and actually they took a lot of measures to protect against these ninja assassins that they always figured were coming for them. Like, there was one clan where at their castle, everyone had to wear long, I guess, bell bottoms, basically.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
That made noise whenever you walked.
Right.
So anyone who was in the castle had to wear these kind
of
pants.
Had to wear corduroy bell bottoms.
Pretty much. And I can only imagine that they had an ample supply for visitors. If everybody had to use them, you know, and not everyone was walking around with bell bottoms, I imagine they had them for you.
Right, like drop your keys in the bowl and put on these bell bottoms.
Sure,
you're going to stay here.
Right.
The other one, a cool one, was in Kyoto. They had the Nijo Castle had what they called nightingale floors, and they were purposefully squeaky. The way they made these wooden floors so they could hear people.
Counterbalance, right?
Uh-huh.
So anyone walking on them, even a ninja,
right,
could be heard.
Yes, and also the daimyo would spend more and more time away from their home at what they called secret springs, basically little hidden resorts at natural springs.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like out of ninja, the vacation resort, bell-bottom jeans, and
squeaky floors
were born.
Nice.
Pretty cool.
You wrapped that up very nicely.
Thank you.
So, Chuck, the whole, I guess, samurai sword up the bottom story, that it was probably a legend, because the guy probably died of an aneurysm or a stroke, right?
Sure.
That kind of reveals that lore that has surrounded ninja forever. And one of the things that they've been attributed with or bestowed with are, like, supernatural powers, right?
Yeah, of course, that's not true.
No.
But it's fun. Yeah. And like you said earlier, the ninja loved it. They were like, yeah, we're 7 feet tall and we can fly and become invisible.
Those are three. They could also walk through walls, which I imagine it would really come in handy for a ninja.
Oh, sure.
You know? But I mean, if you think about it, if you're penetrating a castle that no one else can get through, it probably seems a lot like you can walk through walls.
Exactly.
And then, of course, there's the real basic go-to one that they're ghosts.
Yeah, shapeshifters.
Did you ever read Commando comics?
No.
There was like they were from the 70s, I think. They were like just black and white comics set in World War II. And in one of them, that was this guy had to fight ninjas in Burma, in Burma. And it was pretty cool.
I'm ashamed to say I was a little wuss boy with the comics.
Were you?
I was into Archie and Richie Rich.
What?
I know.
What?
Isn't that awful? And then stuff like the Star Wars comics and stuff like that. But
don't try to cool it up now.
It's awful.
What?
I was a big Archie guy. I was a little Baptist boy, you know.
And Richie Rich?
Yeah, Richie Rich was great.
Yeah. I liked the cartoon. Sure. Never read the comic.
No, you know. I was a little wuss.
Yeah.
Oh, you were into ninjas and stuff, smoking cigarettes.
I was a bad kid.
I was reading Archie in the Bible.
Yeah. Good for you, Chuck.
But here we are, years later.
I know.
The same.
We're both as twisted.
Isn't that funny how that works?
Yeah.
All right.
I've been trying to get better. You've been trying to get worse.
Yeah, so we met in the middle.
Yeah.
Where are we now? With their gear?
I would say we're at Ninja Gear.
And this
Chuck,
is
I should
the coolest
say,
part.
Chuck has a several large printouts of pictures of Ninja Gear.
I do.
That are just bitching.
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about some of these. Ninja, well, first let's talk about their clothes, their uniform, the Ninja Yori.
Yoroi?
It is also called Ninja Armor, and it's like the black jacket, black trousers. Yeah. Hooded cowl and light sandals.
Not a lot of protection with that.
No,
I don't
some
know
of
if
them
armor
were light
is the
armor.
Right word.
Well, they said some of them were light armor under that.
Right.
But it's not much, trust me.
No, it's cloth.
Well, because they wanted to be sneaky.
Sure.
And not make a lot of noise, so armor probably wasn't the best way to get around.
And traditionally, the Yoroi was black, although apparently there is some historical evidence that they wore all-white Yoroi. Which is pretty cool, too.
In the snow?
If it were snowy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
They're like, oh, it's snowing. Got to put on the white Yoroi today and go kill some people.
However, Josh, most of this is fanciful lore. Although they did have these costumes, what they mainly wore, they wanted to blend in. So they mainly just dressed like you and I.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, too. Yeah. Like, if you're going to be an assassin and you're in a public place, if you're dressed like a ninja, people are going to
exactly.
be like, look out for that ninja.
Right.
So, yeah, a lot of times they were apparently masters at hiding in plain sight, right?
Yeah, disguised as priests and merchants and farmers.
Right.
Which is, you know, makes sense to me.
Because what was it that Henry Hill said? He said, when you get killed, it's somebody who's coming at you with a smile who's your friend.
Right.
That's who kills you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Henry Hill. He comes up a lot. It's funny.
Yeah.
I never thought he would come up in a ninja podcast.
I didn't
honest.
Either.
What else did they use, Josh? The ninja toe was the short sword that
the
they wore
back.
On their back, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Used to butcher people.
Yeah.
And then here's what I have the pictures of. The shuko is this cool little claw hand. Mm-hmm. It's like claws on your palm that you would wear as a glove. And it says you can use to fight or to climb trees with.
Tommy Roper had one of those.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. He tried to climb trees once in a while, too. He was never successful.
Really?
He could when he didn't have those on. Like,
yeah.
He could just climb a tree, but just climbing like that, it didn't work.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is the tiger claw.
Those are cool.
Yeah, that looks like Freddy Krueger or Wolverine or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like. And it would butcher you if put to your jugular. And what are these?
And this is my favorite. These are the caltrops. And these were... They look sort of like little metal sharp origami razor things.
I was just about to say origami. They do. You got to leave it to the Japanese. They have great design with everything.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Including little tacks meant to puncture your feet, the soles of your feet.
Yeah, that's what you would do. You would throw these on the floor for your enemy to step on, and they apparently wore like the sandals and the thin shoes, so that worked.
And I wish this were a video podcast because Chuck gave Jerry and I a demonstration of what that would look like. When people were chasing the ninja.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
They also used smoke bombs.
Yep.
And what else? Ropes.
The coolest thing, small one-person boats that were collapsible.
That's awesome.
So they were highly portable.
Yeah.
So a ninja would just be running away from people. He's thrown his tacks. What were the tacks called again?
The caltrops.
Right. He's thrown his caltrops, and they didn't work. A couple of guys got around, and he's reached a river. There's no bamboo in sight. He just whips out his little boat and sails across like, so long, chumps.
Pretty cool.
I'll be back to kill you when you're sleeping.
The other thing that has been refuted by the Mythbusters I read was the Mizugumo, and they were wooden shoes to walk on water with. They kind of look like snowshoes, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Big round things, and your foot goes in the middle to disperse the water. And those Mythbusters guys said, yeah, this doesn't work.
Did they try it out themselves?
Yeah, of course they did.
That doesn't disprove anything. Those
they should
guys
be called,
are too fat to be ninja.
We should call that show the Fun Killers instead of the Mythbusters.
Right, yeah.
All they do is destroy fun.
Nice.
But they said it could work on Marsh, is what they said.
Like, we'll give them something.
Yeah.
Of course, there's the Throwing Star, a.k.a. the Shuriken.
Yeah, and I didn't know this. I thought that, you know, when you see in the movies, they clearly always fling these and embed them
right into somebody's forehead.
Right between the eyes.
Yeah.
But that's really not true, is it?
No, apparently they were just kind of a distracting weapon.
Yeah.
Like it was meant to look like it was about to hit you right between the
sure.
eyes, but the chances of it actually hitting its target are pretty low.
So they would turn around when being chased, throw mm-hmm. a star at them to distract them, and then drop some caltrops on the floor and a smoke bomb maybe.
Right.
And then use a grappling hook and a rope ladder to escape.
That's what they call the Schenectady Shuffle in ninja lore, that combo right there.
Really?
Yeah. So, Chuck, there's the grappling hook, right, which
oh, yeah.
you can't leave out.
Sure.
Basically, if you have all this stuff, you are a little white kid in suburban America trying to be a ninja.
Right.
Because if you're a stealthy guy and you're infiltrating a castle, you're not going to have all this stuff, except maybe your collapsible boat, your caltrops, and your little sword, right?
Right.
But other than that, it seems like this was more the arsenal that no ninja at any one time had all these things on him, right?
Yeah, but in the movies, of course, that's how it's portrayed because it's more fun.
Movies like Enter the Ninja, maybe?
Enter the Ninja?
American Ninja, did you see that one? Did
no.
you watch ninja movies as a kid?
No.
Where were you, Chuck?
I told you, I was reading Archie.
American Ninja was awesome.
I was watching Escape from Witch Mountain and Archie.
That was a creepy movie.
No, it wasn't.
Escape from Witch Mountain?
Well, it didn't age well.
Yeah.
You should go watch it now.
No.
And not the cruddy remake.
No.
Isn't
like The Rock in there?
Yeah, of course he is. That's Dwayne Johnson to you, buddy.
Oh, okay.
What was the first movie, though, Josh, credited as being the first movie with a ninja?
You Only Live Twice, the James Bond movie.
Yes, sir.
When the movie came out in 1967, ninja just exploded in Western culture.
Oh, of course, because people that go to see the James Bond movies are looking for any cool new thing anyway.
Uh-huh.
So imagine when they saw the ninja, they were like, oh, my gosh, that's the coolest mercenary I've ever seen in my life.
They're like, look at those guys butchering everybody.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Of course. I never got into them.
Nah, me neither.
Nah. And then Chuck, of course, you probably haven't heard of this, but there's this thing called G.I. Joe.
I know the early G.I. Joe. We've been over this. The 12-inch G.I. Joe with the kung fu grip.
No,
not tiny
them.
Dolls.
The tiny ones. They're not dolls. They're action figures. What you played with are dolls.
Yes.
Like you can hug them and cuddle them. You can't cuddle an action figure.
That's true.
And they had bendable elbows and stuff like that. Did your 12-inchers have kung fu grip? Because
oh, yeah.
The little action figures did, too.
Did they really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's where it started, buddy.
Okay. Well, in the 1982 series, a little ninja was introduced known as Snake Eyes.
Right.
He worked on the good side.
Oh, really? I thought Snake Eyes was bad.
No.
Oh.
You're thinking of Storm Shadow.
Oh, okay.
Storm Shadow is a Cobra Ninja. And actually, I was looking on YoJo.com today.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever trolled that site?
No.
Oh, my God. It's like Nostalgia Central, right?
I did see that new movie, though.
The G.I. Joe movie?
Yeah.
Is it out?
No, it's out on video now.
Was it any good?
No, not really.
Okay. And I love the cartoon, though. I don't think any animation had more of an impact on the development of my personality than the G.I. Joe cartoon.
Really?
Yeah. Every time it came on, I was just like, thank you, God. Thank you for letting me be alive and at an age where I can fully appreciate the G.I. Joe cartoon.
See, I said the same thing about Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
So that's where we were.
So, well, again, let me go back to Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow. Storm Shadow is clearly a ninja. Snake Eyes is listed on his file card
uh-huh.
on the back of the package as a commando, although uh-huh. he is proficient in bladed weapons and several martial arts, right?
Okay.
So I'm thinking, why would he be called a commando? Is he not a ninja? And I was going to totally throw the smackdown on the grabster for calling Snake Eyes a ninja in this
uh-huh.
article. I did a little more digging. It turns out that Snow Job and Snake Eyes were once brothers in arms for the same clan. And actually, Snake Eyes is a trained ninja, although he's also a commando.
Really?
Yeah. And then they went their separate ways. There was a little bit of a falling out. They went their separate ways.
Sure.
Storm Shadow, the Cobra Ninja, actually went to work for Cobra as a disguise to find who killed the clan leader.
Wow.
Well, yeah. And once he did find out, he was actually brainwashed.
Uh-huh.
He was discovered as a spy. He was discovered, brainwashed, and then actually did start working for Cobra. Snake Eyes, he always was on Joe's side.
Dude. I did not know that there was that much real information out there about G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
So this is all in the history. Someone's actually written that.
Yeah. Well, there was a comic series you're probably not aware of.
Yeah, not at all.
And yeah, it's pretty storied.
See, I was confused. When I watched the movie, I kept waiting for Joe. I kept waiting for Franco Harris to come out, you know, with the beard.
Who?
Yeah, Joe always looked like Franco Harris to me, the Pittsburgh Steeler running back.
Wait a minute. I'm trying to think of who you're thinking of. Duke was the closest to the...
Well, there was no Joe. Joe was a group.
That was the collective name of them.
Yeah, see, that just confuses me.
Oh.
Because back in the day...
Don't be confused.
Back in the day, G.I. Joe was a dude, a single dude.
Right, but then they just kind of said, that sucks. Let's go with the better version here.
Okay.
Let's go with action figures. Let's make G.I. Joe the collective thing.
Right.
Did you see that link to the stop action Vietnam movie, full-length Vietnam movie that Rob Schiff sent?
I did. Did you see my reply to that?
Yeah, you made a movie?
I did. My brother and I, when we were 6 and 9 years old, respectively, made a stop-motion Super 8 movie with G.I. Joe dolls. And it had a little plot and everything.
What was the plot?
We had this little shiny button, and the button represented like a microfilm disc. And they, you know, it got stolen, and Joe had to go retrieve it from the bad guys.
Nice.
And we shot it in the woods near our house, and it was pretty cool.
Do you have – were there explosions?
No, there were no explosions. I think we might have lit something on fire.
I'll bet. You're in the woods.
But I don't know if it still exists. It's got to be somewhere. But my
if you
brother
find it, I want to see it.
So, Scott, if you're listening, if you have that, we would love to see that.
Agreed, Scott.
But I don't think he has it.
We should probably get back to Ninja, right?
Is there anything else?
There are a couple of things. Of course, Ninja exploded in popular culture recently to kind of rival Pirates and Chuck Norris, right?
Well, that's what I hear. I didn't know about that, though.
So there's like that site I just showed you, Real Ultimate Power, about
great.
How ninjas flip out and kill everybody.
They're awesome, and by awesome, I mean totally sweet.
It tells a story of one ninja who was eating in a diner, and some guy dropped a spoon, and the ninja flipped out and killed the whole town.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just stuff like that.
Right. What's the whole pirate versus ninja thing? Because someone wrote in about that.
That one, I don't know.
Okay.
I know that Ask a Ninja took on AskANinja.com is another site where you can ask a ninja practical questions like how to work a new iPhone app and stuff like that. But he does actually take on the pirates on Pirate Talk Like a Pirate Day, which we mentioned as well. So apparently there's some bad blood between pirates and ninja.
My money is on the ninja.
Well, sure.
Because they could sneak onto a pirate ship pretty easily, I would think.
Pirates are all brash. A ninja just comes up, puts the blade at the base of your skull, inserts it into your brain, scrambles it.
Right.
Dead pirate.
The pirates are all drunk on rum, and ninja, I don't think they drink.
No.
They might hit the sake every once in a while, but that's about it.
And then one last thing. If you're a true ninja lover, there is one place you have to be first week of April, and that is in Aiga. At the Haku Hojo White Phoenix Castle, known as the Ninja Museum.
Yeah, they've embraced, Aiga has really embraced their ninja roots, and they try to capitalize on that, obviously.
Yeah.
For money.
Well, why not? It's the root of all ninja.
Yeah, I went to that website, the museum website. It's pretty cool.
Is it? Mm-hmm. But they have a festival, a ninja festival.
I know.
Every year, including a ninja parade.
I know, I want to see that.
I can see ninja like driving around in a little Shriner's car.
Right.
Yeah. So that's ninja.
That's it?
Yeah.
Great.
We covered just about everything, but if you want to see some boss pics of ninja hiding in trees and ninja weapons and stuff like that, you can type in ninja in the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com. And I guess now it's time for listener mail, huh?
Yes, Josh, I've got a short one. I'm going to call this Our Influence on the World.
Nice.
This is pretty cool. I don't know if you read this one or not. You're going to love it. It just came in today. Chuck and Josh, I am a geologist in Columbus, Ohio. Go Buckeyes. And I often stumble across geo... Is it cache? I always say cache and cache.
I think you can say it either way.
And I often stumble across geocaches when I'm out in the field doing research. I always follow all of the geocaching rules and sign the logbook along with usually leaving something behind for others to find. This time, however, I was a little different. It was a little different because... When I opened the sealed plastic container, I found a keychain, a deck of cards, bottle caps, and 2 Carlos Santana CDs.
That's so awesome.
So awesome. I thought this was a little odd until I remembered your podcast on geocaching, caching from last year, when you two joked about putting Santana CDs.
So wait, should we go back and listen to one part?
Sure. So like if your average hiker happens upon this box full of... Santana CDs, and they're thinking, wow, I can just take these CDs. Someone left these. This is awesome. So there it is. And apparently...
And that wasn't the only time. We mentioned Santana CDs several times.
Yeah, several times, yeah. Sure. And JD from Columbus says, I thought I would let you know that at least two geocaching fans in Columbus listen to your podcast. And it was awesome to sort of meet one of them.
That's cool.
I don't think that's coincidence, do you?
I don't see how it could be. A Santana CD and a geocache, are you joking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was our influence directly.
I agree.
Pretty cool.
You know, we've had another influence on somebody in, I believe, Slovakia.
Not sure.
I think so. There is a guy who wrote in, and he founded a site called Weird Worm and actually started a podcast, and it's pretty good. You should listen to it.
I did.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah.
And he attributes it directly to being inspired by us.
Hey, cool.
Yeah, so you should check out weirdworm.com and their accompanying podcast, too. It's
watch, they're
cool.
Going to overtake us in the ratings immediately.
Yeah, probably.
Thanks, Josh.
Sorry.
Thanks a lot.
At least there's people out there trading Santana CDs. That'll be our legacy, Chuck.
Right.
Well, if you have any story about how Chuck and I have impacted your life, influenced you in any way, or got you to do something really, really bad, we want to hear about it in an email, which you can send to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com. Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant.
Me.
Yeah, that's right.
That's me.
Now fall over.
Thud.
Yes. Not yet, Chuck. We're getting there.
Okay.
Okay. How are you doing? You feeling a little sick after Los Angeles?
Yes, Josh. Heavy workload and stress usually means Chuck crashes and gets sick afterward.
Yeah. I came very close.
That's what happened.
As I was telling you, I am a walking ad for emergency.
I know.
It works really well.
It's good stuff.
Chuck, I hope you feel better soon.
Thank you.
In the meantime, let's talk about the satanic symbol that is the goat.
Yeah, the inverted star is supposed to be a goat head. Is that right?
Yes. That is actually the Baphomet.
The Baphomet?
The Baphomet. it's, a 17th century French illustration. 19th century French magician Eliphas Levi drew the Baphomet of Mendes, right?
Okay.
And Mendes is like the key term here. This is where the idea that the goat was satanic came from, okay? So back in the day, back when the Greeks were running around Egypt, let's say the 4th century BC.
Okay.
One of them, Herodotus, wrote of the Mendes people who lived along the Nile and venerated and essentially worshipped goats, specifically male goats, as symbols of fertility. And the Greeks, doing what they did, eventually ripped this idea off and labeled their god Pan, the king of the satyrs, the half-god, half-man god.
That's right.
Who liked to woo the ladies and basically press his male goat sexuality onto them. Right?
Okay.
So we have the idea that a male goat, a.k.a. a ram in a lot of cases, I'm pretty sure, became the symbol for powerful male sexuality, right?
Sure, why not?
As the Christian church came about and sexuality kind of diverged from reality, that concept became more and more taboo, increasingly taboo, until finally you get to the point where we arrive at the Knights Templar, who supposedly venerated Baphomet.
Those guys pop up a lot with us.
They do. That image of Baphomet, not the 19th century one, but the image of a goat head, mm-hmm. which they supposedly idolized, was used against them to persecute them as Satanists and kill them. And from that point forward, the goat went from pagan god of male fertility or sexuality to satanic from that moment on, to the point now where you can look at a goat and you get a touch of evil from it, don't you?
No, I was just about to counter and say that's funny because goats are the sweetest, most adorable little creatures on the planet.
It depends. First of all, it depends on their age. It depends on their size. It depends on how readily you can see those satanic eyes of theirs.
I disagree.
It's Satan walking the earth, Chuck. Let's just come out and say it, okay?
Everyone knows I had pet goats, so you're not going to get me to say anything like that.
Plus, if you're anything, you're a lackey for the goat lobby.
I am.
Yeah. What about fainting goats, though? I have to agree. These are not satanic. They are. They fall into the cute camp, right?
Yeah, it's pretty cute and sad and funny. It's all wrapped up into one.
Yeah.
In fact, I have never experienced such a range of emotions as when I watched Fainting Goats and Fainting Kittens.
Yeah. Fainting Kittens in particular got my goat.
I just showed Lizzie.
It's awesome.
She laughed
I know,
harder than I thought she would.
Because it's hilarious, Chuck.
It's so sad looking, though.
I know, but then they kind of look around and look like a stupid kitten and like blink a few times and they're fine. I urge anyone who hasn't seen, first of all, Fainting Goats, to go on to YouTube.com. That's YouTube.com.
Yeah.
It's a kind of like a video repository of sorts.
You can share videos.
Yeah, it's amazing. You type in Fainting Goats and then watch the one with the greatest number of hits, and you will see what we're talking about. I think it has 10,800,000 hits right now.
Yeah.
Watch that one. You'll see what we're talking about the rest of the time. You can also, if you want to treat yourself, type in Fainting Goat Kittens hyphen original video. And
yeah.
You'll see what makes me laugh and makes Chuck cry.
And if you want to really treat yourself, type in Where's Bee?
Oh, that one's adorable.
That's
the little lamb?
Yeah, that's the cute. Is that a lamb or a goat?
It's a lamb. But a lamb cute. Is a female goat, right? Or it's a baby goat? Isn't a goat a male lamb?
A baby goat is a kid. A lamb is a lamb.
Huh. Oh, yeah, a lamb is a baby sheep.
Yeah.
Okay. We're all set. No need for emails, everybody.
Myotonic goats.
Okay, so yeah, there's other names for these things. Now that hopefully you've gone and watched this, you're up to speed and you'll know what we're about to be talking about, because we are going to explain this weird phenomenon that is fainting goats, a.k.a., as you just said, myotonic goats. What else, Chuck? What are some other awesome names for these things?
The Tennessee Stifflegs, which is a good name for a band, as is myotonic goats. Tennessee Wooden Legs, nervous goats, and fall down goats. I imagine fall down goats was pretty early in the game.
Yeah, that's what Bam Bam from Flintstone called them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They go by several different names, Josh, but they are not fainting at all, actually.
No. And we should say, if you are too lazy to go look up this YouTube video and you don't know what we're talking about, basically, these goats, the videos of goats who are being chased by like a farmer or something with an umbrella, and all of a sudden they'll just stiffen up and fall over, and it looks like they fainted dead away or possibly died and instantly gone into rigor mortis.
It looks really like they've been shot and killed by a sniper.
Exactly. And then after a second, they just kind of get up and run away some more. They're called fainting goats, but that's not at all what's going on. Instead, Chuck, it's like an altered startle response, right?
Yeah, it's a congenital condition. Means they get it since, they're little baby kid goats. They were born with it.
Right.
And it's called myotonia congenita. And there's another couple of names, the Becker type disease or Thompson's disease.
Mm-hmm.
And, we'll get into the specifics, but what happens is they tense up, like the fight or flight, like if an explosion went off right behind you right now, you'd tense up and then go, whew.
Maybe.
What happens here is they tense up and they don't untense. They stay stiff long enough to fall over on their side as if they were dead.
Yes, as appropriately Robert Lamb, who wrote this article, points out, it's like that, when you tense up from a fright or a startle or danger, flight or fight or flight.
Uh-huh.
It's been a while, clearly. Hasn't
I know.
That tension that's relieved almost immediately, that basically your brain, like, getting your body like zapped into preparedness.
Get ready to run.
Right.
Goat.
Stop thinking about Tootsie Roll Pops, jerk. It's time for you to kick some bottom.
Yeah. Or in the goat's case, quit thinking about that big patch of grass.
Right.
There's a wolf behind you.
Right.
Run and get out of here.
Exactly. But instead of running, they tense up, they fall over because their muscles take about 10 or 20 seconds to relax, right?
Yes.
So you talked about myotonic. They're myotonic goats. Myotonia exists in more than just goats.
Yeah.
It exists in humans as well.
Yeah, kittens, we said.
Yeah.
Saddest video ever.
It's so awesome. And myotonia is basically this, it's a disorder of the central nervous system, a congenital one, like you said, Chuck, that's characterized by stiff muscles that they're rigid and they take time to relax, right?
Yeah, I think the stat.
Involuntary muscles, we should say, not like your cardiac muscle or your involuntary muscle.
Sure. The stat I found was that it affects about 1 in 100,000 people, and in northern Scandinavia, 1 in 10,000.
Huh.
Who knew?
Well, I guess they have a bottleneck up there of some sort.
I don't know.
Because not that many people want to move up to Scandinavia.
I didn't see any kind of explanation for why there would be more abundant there, but that's how many it affects in people. If it's if you have it, there's some medication. It's not that big of a deal. Stay exercised. Stay loose.
Right.
Don't walk around big piles of glass, I would say, or beds of nails. You don't want to fall on anything like that.
Maybe you shouldn't be driving a car.
But I don't think humans actually stiffen and fall over like the goats. I think it's more of a, you know, temporary stiffening. And
or again, as Robert Lamb put it, a full-body Charlie horse, but without the pain.
Yeah. Yeah, they say they don't feel pain. I don't know about that.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second.
All right.
But there's a similar condition, too, called myoclonus. And it's actually the basis of my favorite, probably my favorite physiological trait of humans.
What's that?
The myoclonic jerk. You know, when you're falling asleep and then all of a sudden you go, and you
is that what
you
that's
jerk
called?
Awake.
Yes. Yeah, that happens to me.
And if you'll notice, most of the time you're dozing and you're dreaming of maybe falling down a stair or
sure.
something like that. So apparently your brain is either confused
mm-hmm.
that you are in fact falling, or it doesn't understand why your muscles are relaxing in some weird way,
right.
And it's jolting you awake.
Okay.
Or it thinks you are dying and it's railing against dying. It's trying to get your heart going again. Those are the two explanations I've heard.
Either way, thank you, body.
Yes.
And mind.
But another name for it is the hypnic jerk.
The hypnic jerk?
It's just great.
Do you like it when it happens to you, or you just think it's neat?
It's just funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird feeling. It's sort of like when you almost fall back in a chair and you catch yourself. There's nothing more like, you know, thrilling to the body than that, oh my gosh, I'm going to die here in 1 second.
Exactly. So it's thrilling because your muscles tense up. You mm-hmm. have to wonder if you're just sitting there for 10 or 20 seconds, does your brain know, your brain apparently would know
yeah.
that there's no longer any danger, but you can't move.
Right.
Which I imagine would kind of be kind of stressful. We know that the brain knows that there's no longer any danger because the actual disorder is on the cellular level in the muscles, right?
Yeah. There's a gene, Josh, called the CLCN1, the chloride channel 1 gene.
Of course.
And it's involved in the production of proteins, which are, you know, proteins are good for muscle relaxing and contracting and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, and chloride ions specifically, right?
Yeah, what's the deal? Too much chloride?
Yeah, check the point of being alive as a functioning body is homeostasis, right?
Right.
So you want an equal amount or a relatively comparable amount of positively charged sodium ions, which tell your muscles to contract.
Right.
And negatively charged chloride ions, which say, go ahead and relax muscles, right?
Oh, there's not enough chloride in this case.
Yes.
Right.
So there's an abundance of sodium
uh-huh.
and not enough chloride, which means that when the cells are innervated, the muscle cells are innervated with an electrical impulse from the brain,
right.
like tense up,
uh-huh.
it takes them longer to relax because they're out of whack because this gene is not expressing those chloride ions like
yeah.
it should be.
But pretty cool.
So it's not the brain any longer thinking that we're afraid or that there's a danger. It's the muscles. It's all in the muscles.
That's right. And it is hereditary. It can be dominant or recessive, meaning either one of your parents can have the gene or both. Not too picky there. And the difference is with the goats is they're actually bred to encourage this.
Right. And here you mentioned something a second ago that kind of smacked of the ethics of it, right? I don't remember what it was.
Maybe
but
I did.
Kind of like,
but
eh.
Let's go to, well, just people laughing. Every time I see those videos, I think the goats, you know, they're roaming around their pen, and then I get the feeling they see people coming. They're like, oh, God.
Here we go again.
Some jerk is going to shoot a gun in the air or something, and we're all going to fall over, and they're going to laugh at us. Very funny, haha.
Right, exactly. So here we go again.
Here we go again.
And every time they see a human, without fail, I'm sure a human does that to them.
And the humans laugh and think it's the funniest thing they've ever seen. The goats
right.
are just like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and actually there's two reasons that fainting goats are bred these days. One is for novelty, because they do that. And another is for meat, basically.
Yeah, that made me sad. I thought it would just be strictly novelty and having them as a pet.
No, and initially, I mean, that's what most livestock goats are used for is meat, and frankly, they're delicious. But
I wouldn't know.
They're so delicious. Goat is awesome.
Goat.
But if you think of them as satanic, you can eat them all day long. It's like you're eradicating evil by eating the goat. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Give me one of those evil satanic goat tacos. I want to do my part.
Can I give you a tad of history?
Yeah.
You want to talk about the history of it?
Sure.
Okay. I know we're hopping around here.
That's
like
right.
A goat on fire.
Like B.
But the reason that Tennessee stiff legs or fall down goats, as some people call them, are called Tennessee stiff legs or Tennessee wooden legs is because they were brought down from Nova Scotia, allegedly, by a farmhand named John Tinsley.
Yeah, that's what they think.
Yeah. From what I saw, that was the likeliest explanation.
Yeah, to Marshall County, Tennessee in the late 1800s,
mm-hmm.
1880s.
Yep, and he started breeding them, which is called unnatural selection. We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
But the goats were originally not bred for novelty, right? It took 100 years for them to really start to be bred for novelty. They were bred because, Chuck, as you pointed out, their muscles don't atrophy.
Right.
They do the opposite, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you think there's muscle waste going on, think again, because it actually makes the animal much leaner for slaughter.
Right.
Yeah, it's hard for me to even say that.
Right. So they're, because of all the tensing and untensing that they do more than the average animal, they're kind of bulk. They're ripped.
Yeah, they're buff.
Right? So they have a loaf. They're lean meat, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of meat to muscle as well. So they're prized for their meat, and apparently their propensity toward myotonism, myotonia,
tensing up,
fainting, prevents them from climbing fences, which is a big problem when you're keeping goats as livestock. They like to just hop right over a fence you erect for them.
Mine didn't.
No,
my goats loved being pet goats.
I'm sure. Were they house goats?
Well, no, we had a big pen, and they were actually in there with the dogs. We had two dogs and two goats, and they were, I mean, the goats, I think, took their cues from the dogs because they were very, very playful, and I used to play games with my goat, Nestor, all the time.
Whatever happened?
Nestor, well, Billy died, which is very sad.
That's a good name for
him. And then, of course, and then Nestor, we eventually were like, you know what, we need to move Nestor out to a farm, so this lady took him. And Nestor rode in the back of the truck with me with his head on my lap the whole way. And
what did the lady do to Nestor, do you think?
I think she kept Nestor as a goat, and that's the story I'm sticking to, that Nestor was a pet until he died of old age.
That is a beautiful story, Chuck.
Yeah.
Okay, so good. So your goats fared very well. I'm mm-hmm. glad to hear that. Remember the goats at my birthday party? They one of them was a house goat, remember?
Oh, yeah.
House goat.
Uh-huh.
Wow. So there was an actual reason that fainting goats were bred initially, and it wasn't for kicks. The Tennessee farmers of the 1880s actually were a little more soulful than the ones today.
Yeah, and it wasn't funny back then. Nothing was funny
back then.
I'm sure
somebody... Right, yeah, exactly.
Don't laugh at that.
I can't say it. I just had like 80 great jokes ran through my head.
So are you talking about the protection of the herd?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
So the goats become an established breed of their own by the 1950s.
Right.
And about that time, they start to leave Tennessee. I think for Texas was the next place that they really spread out.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't until the 1980s that the goats were really diverged into two, not necessarily two different breeds because they haven't separated yet, but there's one line that's generally bred for meat. Right?
Okay.
Like the original version.
Gotcha.
And the other line is bred as a novelty.
Okay.
And they tend to be smaller and just faint like that.
Cuter.
Yes.
Faint longer.
Yeah, because if you just kind of leave it alone, the myotonia is worse as a younger, worse early in life.
Yeah, they get kind of used to it sometimes more. They adapt to it. They're not as scared later in life. So, yeah,
right.
Younger goat is more prone to fall over stiff.
Exactly. So, but I think if you compare an adult fainting goat bred uh-huh. in that line to be a novelty to a goat that was bred for its meat of the same age, the novelty goat's going to probably fall over at the drop of a hat
right,
still.
Right.
Because farmer thinks that's funny.
Well, the other reason that Robert says they can't find much evidence of this anymore, but I guess back in the day, they would, and this sort of makes sense, they would add some of these fainting goats to their herd of regular goats mm-hmm. in case there were predators around. A pack of wolves come up, scares the little pebbly doo-doo out of these goats, and then the stiff goats fall over, and get eaten while the other ones take off and run. So it essentially, it's almost like they're not bait, but you know, a much easier kill, keep the wolves occupied so the rest of them can escape.
You know what they are?
What?
A sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, you're right. That's exactly what they are. But there's no evidence that that's really the reason that they're breeding them now.
No, and there's apparently not much evidence that, or how much that was used. I think it could have just been a good idea, right?
Yeah.
So, Chuck, the idea of, like, make no mistake, myotonia is a it's a deficiency.
Yeah.
It's a disorder.
Sure.
It's not a desirable trait.
No.
So the idea of taking a because it's an undesirable trait, under natural selection, it shouldn't exist, right?
Right.
Because if you take a fainting goat out in nature, like you said,
along
with a herd of sheep or other goats or whatever, yeah. No, they'll be the first eaten, and then they won't have a chance to reproduce eventually, and that trait would die out. But them being bred for that, for an undesirable trait, and then protected by humans, whether by a fence or,
right.
You know, like a hillbilly with a shotgun or whatever,
yeah.
That's called unnatural selection, right?
Yeah, nothing natural about it.
No, or artificial selection is another way to put it.
Yeah, and anytime something like that happens, there's going to be some people probably at an organization called PETA that might stand up and say, I don't know if this is such a cool thing for humans to do. And PETA, as expected, isn't the biggest fan of raising fainting goats. Humane Society isn't so worried about it. They say there's a lot more breeding issues in the world that we should be more concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
And neither one of them have an official stance. But
no, the woman from PETA that Robert interviewed in this article sounded like she hadn't heard of fainting goats until he called her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the impression I got.
Oh, yeah, the quote is a little vague, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, she just like the standard PETA quote, just plug in the animal. But who knows? There is no official stance, though, so maybe Robert alerted her to this whole phenomenon.
Yeah, but they have an official stance now.
Yeah, probably.
And it's stop breeding fainting goats. It's a little late for that, though. It's recognized and prized as a separate American breed of goat. There's about 3,000 to 5,000 of them running around and then falling over.
Right.
And they don't look like they're going anywhere. The Livestock Conservancy, I think is what it's called, suggests that this breed of goat be very much protected and taken care of and
yeah.
conserved is, I guess, the best word to use.
Did I tell you about Emily and the little baby goat at the winery?
No. At the winery in Athens?
No, we went to, right before this LA trip, you know, we went up to Santa Barbara,
yeah.
wine country.
Yeah.
And we went in this one winery, and as we were going in, there was a guy with a dog outside, and, you know, of course, we attacked this dog and were petting it. He said, yeah, they wouldn't let it in because they got a baby goat in there. So Emily hears this, of course, and it's just like inside saying, where's the goat? This lady has probably about a six-week-old kid in her arms wrapped in a blanket
mm-hmm.
that's has some sort of physical ailment, not fainting goat syndrome.
It was part human?
Part human. It had human hands. No, but she had this little baby kid, and you know, Emily goes over and starts drooling, and the lady says, do you want to hold it? And in less than a second, the goat swap had been made. And, you know, for the next 20 minutes, this goat is literally, like, nuzzling Emily in the neck.
Nice.
And I took about 20 pictures of the range of emotions on Emily's face. It's
yeah, was
funny.
There any crying at all?
There wasn't crying. It was just, it was a type of ecstasy that you rarely see in an adult human
That's
female.
Awesome. That is
pretty
awesome.
Cool. Yeah, very cute.
You're like, long story short, we own that goat now.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, not true.
My aunt used to have a pygmy goat in California along the Russian River.
Did they not get big, I guess?
Hence the,
I would say a pygmy fainting goat would be about the cutest combination.
Yeah, especially one that like asked to shine your shoes with like big doe eyes or something. You know,
those kittens though, man, I can't watch that.
Yeah,
it just doesn't look right.
It's awesome, I think, because they don't look like they're hurt. They don't look injured. They just look surprised every time and then fine.
Well, kittens look surprised with everything. They have that constant look of surprise.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, we've touched on the satanic nature of goats,
mm-hmm.
meat goats, fainting kittens, unnatural selection, Tennessee, Texas, the 19th century. And that's about it, right?
Emily's unnatural love of animals.
Yeah. Myoclonic jerks.
Yeah.
Everything's right on.
And now, you know, when you see these videos and you show your buddies, you can now tell people. Something
this
you should
exactly
know.
This is exactly what's going on.
Say they're not fainting at all, actually.
Yeah, stupid. So if you want to learn more about fainting goats, remember, go to YouTube, YouTube.com, and type in fainting goats and then fainting goat kittens. Which doesn't really make sense. It could just be fainting kittens, but still.
Yeah.
And you'll see some hilarity. You can also learn more about fainting goats in a very well-written and well-researched article by Robert Lamb of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, How Fainting Goats Work. Type that into the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com. We want to hear from you. First of all, you can go check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. You can follow us on Twitter, SYSK Podcast, and you can join our Kiva team, kiva.org/team/stuffyoushouldknow. You can also always email us, and specifically, if you have ever tampered with natural selection through artificial selection, we want to hear about it. Send us an email about this. Right, Chuck?
That's right.
That's stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
You've been listening to Josh and Chuck and the radio version of Stuff You Should Know. If you'd like to contact Josh or Chuck, you can email them at stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com. You can subscribe to Stuff You Should Know and other podcasts at howstuffworks.com, as well as on iTunes. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and online at WFMU.org. Down.
You're tuned to WFMU. This show is called Downtown Soulville. I'm Mr. Finewine. You're either tuned to WFMU or you're here on the Coney Island Boardwalk listening live as I'm spinning records out here. I've got a view of the ocean. I've got a view of lots of bodies here on the boardwalk. It's getting a little dark. There's a nice cool ocean breeze. I've got some soul music for you for an hour. We'll start out with some R&B sounds, and then as night falls over Brooklyn, we'll get a little funkier. Stay tuned.
Sake, sake.